Welcome to the Groups Matter Podcast. Rick Howerton. I am co-host Brian Daniel. I'm with Rick as always. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
You know, we said at episode 13, we're at episode 14. Yep. Can you believe that? We talked about October and, you know, the weather. So, you know, we're in the peak of SEC football and SEC country.
Yep. It's getting crazy.
And it's real exciting. But as a Kentucky alum, I don't spend a lot of time on football.
Okay. So, you're kind of having to be in a little more now, trying to watch something on television about UK, because I know you're a huge UK fan. Are you doing anything interesting?
So what you're saying is, I'm reading between the lines, that Kentucky football does not fall into the interesting category.
From a University of Louisville fan, that would be true, but is there something interesting that you're doing?
Funny you would ask. I do think there's a book I'm reading now. I picked it up. It's called I'll Make My Stand. It's not for everybody. It is basically a Southern manifesto. I'm a little bit of a student of Southern literature. You probably knew that.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I picked this up, it was written in the 1930s by a group that called themselves the Southern Agrarians, or the Vanderbilt Agrarians. And they created this collection of essays. I think it's like 12 essays. And it's written to confront coming industrialism, or progressivism is what they've called it. And I picked this up. It's always, I wouldn't say it's been on my list. I've known about it. It's a fairly demanding read, but I thought, just with the way the things have been going on, particularly last spring and summer when you had the Supreme Court ruling on the gay marriage, and then in that same kind of time frame was the Charleston, and then all the fallout that came from that, it just felt, you know, being It really caused me to revisit a lot of things that I really didn't think were issues up until that point, right? So what I found is, like, one of the essays is the philosophy of progressivism. And so the essayist is calling into question exactly what that is, because it's not just technology, right? I mean, it tends to fall into, we think in terms of the wheel, the automobile, the telephone, the internet, when we think about progress and then how we relate to that as humanity. But one of the essayists, he said this about, and this is 1930s, pretty interesting, I thought. He said, all of this has created an environment to where individuals are no longer concerned with the saving of their souls, but in their comfort.
Wow.
And it's fascinating. And that essay has been, I'm probably going to have to go back and read it, because frankly, it's quite a bit above my head. They're bringing in all these philosophers and all these references that I just don't get. But I think it's worth noting that this individual, this essayist, most likely would not put himself in the evangelical camp. And so he's talking about the saving of your soul, as if that is, to a degree, what it means to be human, is to strive for that. And that is how he is unpacking this term progress. Quite a bit different from our cultural understanding of progress, I think.
Well, and Brian, what's so interesting about that is, if the longing is for comfort, if we're going to grow people in Christ through groups, spiritual growth begins with discomfort. When the Bible says to do something, we move beyond our comfort, and that's when the growth happens. Man, that's telling.
Yeah, you know, last week we spent a lot of the show talking about multiplication, and that was something that I don't remember us mentioning, is talking about the comfort level, that a lot of the pushback to multiplying groups and creating new groups is just that, the matter of comfort, and that's not what life is about at all.
That's interesting, very interesting.
But hey, we've got episode 14 here. We've got a great show.
Yes, sir.
You have lined up one of my favorite people for this show.
Bill Search.
Bill Search is just wonderful. Real excited about having him on. And Bill's going to be talking about the role of the senior pastor in group life. And what makes Bill credible?
Well, Bill was the groups guy at one of the largest churches in the country, Southeast Christian. Not only was he the groups guy there, they had one of the largest Sunday schools in the country, as well as one of the largest groups ministries in the country. And now he's the senior pastor at a church in California. So he brings some thoughts there that few people could even think about.
That's exciting. And then the post of the week is Mike Mack, 4 specific things that you can do to make your group more Christ-centered. And this is just one of those things we want to keep you know, we want to keep this Christ-centeredness, gospel-centeredness at the heart of what we do. And then, Rick, your list is about churchwide campaigns, which is something I know that you are very intimate with.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this because so many churches do churchwide campaigns, but you can hardly ever find any place where you can give you can give a group pastor direction on what their roles and responsibilities are during a campaign. So we're going to climb into that space.
All right. And then always everybody's favorite segment, Tweets of the Week.
Tweets of the Week.
You know, are we going to keep doing that? Tweets. It is fun. I love pulling the tweets out. But it's an opportunity to hear from everyone out there via Twitter. You know, I didn't get Twitter early on, but Twitter is a powerful tool.
Yes, it is.
Powerful tool for communicating, for keeping up with what's going on. It's real. You remember when we had the 100-year flood here or the 1,000-year flood? I was getting more reliable information from Twitter than I was from the news agencies because they couldn't get around. And that's when I realized that Twitter is more than just telling people who I ate with and what I ate.
Well, many people when I'm on the road tell me that they love my tweets. And the deal is this. I do a tweet in the morning for church leaders at 3:15. This is the one group leaders talk to me about. At 3:15, 5 days a week, I do a tweet just for small group leaders.
I did not know you did that.
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
That's a cool idea.
Anyway.
All right. So, Mike Mack, 4 specific things you can do to make your group more Christ-centered. You want to get us started off here with episode 14 of the Groups Matter podcast.
Mike Mack is one of my favorite guys. Got an incredible blog, and this is from his blog. He says straight up, a healthy group is Christ-centered. Then he goes on to say, Christ is the real leader. I love that because Christ really is the leader of the group. He says this is where group health starts because all the other vital signs are dependent upon how well you as the leader keep Christ at the center of your life and your group. And then he gives 4 very specific ways that you can make your group more Christ-centered. The first one is recognize his presence. And he goes on to tell us that he begins every meeting with a worshipful prayer, recognizing Christ's presence, and that he is the leader of the group. And he said, sometimes I even include Matthew 18:20 in my prayer, reminding the people that Jesus said, whenever 2 or more are gathered, he is there with them.
Yep.
Now that sounds real profound, but it is really just an incredible biblical fact that when we make, he's already with us. But when we realize his presence, then we keep that in mind as we move forward. Very important thought. The second thing he says is depend on God's power. He says, I find that many groups need to learn to take members' hurts and problems to Jesus, not just to one another. I love what he said here, and here's why. James 5:16 reminds us, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective. All too often I've heard people talk about small group ministry and be training leaders and say, confession is transformational. That's not true. Confession is not transformational. God is a transformer. So when people confess their sins to each other or their hurts or heartaches or their needs, and people then pray for them, God works because of their crying out on that person's behalf. It's just important to remember that we depend on his power, not the power of a comment or the power of another person in the room, rather on God's power. Then his third point is seek his purposes. He says, what are Christ's purposes for our group? Begin with that question. What are Christ's purposes for our group? And then study the Great Commission and other passages. I love, he goes on to give some real practical advice. Ask, why did Jesus say he came into the world? To seek and to save the lost. And Brian, this may get back to our last podcast where we've talked about group multiplication. If we're seeking his purposes because he came to seek and save the lost, we're going to make room for other people to be in groups when we multiply our group and open the door for another group to welcome people in and make space in our own group for people to join us.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if you're not seeking his purpose and leaning on your own understanding and your own designs, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yes. For sure. And then finally, he says, move beyond study. Now, he's not saying don't use a study. He's not suggesting that. He just says, don't just study Jesus as a historical figure of antiquity. This is very important. I think all too often in group life, when people get together, they think they're talking about a person that lived long ago, not a person who is living in their hearts, not the person who is moving amongst them. We need to move beyond the discussion to Jesus being with us in that room, and that his presence and his history both collide together to bring us to understanding of who he was, which reminds us who he is, because he is unchanging.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and the way that I've kind of understood this in the past is there's ink on the pages, and then there's just truth, the truth that emerges from that. And sometimes we get wrapped up in the ink on the pages to the neglect of the actual truth of the message.
Yeah. And here's how a leader might know that they're just getting too deeply into the page, the printed page. When something comes up that needs a response from God, rather than praying, they theologize. Rather than calling on God, well, let's talk about another verse of Scripture. It's okay to do that because it points to who God is. But if you know who God is but never call upon him, when you realize he is able because of who he is to make a difference, I think you may be ignoring his presence in the room.
So the things you can do to make your group more Christ-centered, number one, recognize his presence. And what I really like that is he's already there. Jesus is there. Recognize him. And I think if you'll just acknowledge that, I think the rest takes care of itself. Number two, depend on his power. Number three, seek his purpose. Purpose is a big word, I think. Seek his purposes. And then number four, move beyond study. You know, Mike's written for us. So he's got this blog, but he's also contributed as a writer to a lot of what we've done.
Well, some would consider Mike one of the most prolific writers in group life, he and Bill Donahue. They have both written a massive number of books between the two of them that have helped so many of us in group ministry. So they may want to look Mike up on Amazon and see what some of his books are, too.
All right, so check out Mike Mack's blog. You just Google Mike Mack, that's M-A-C-K, and small groups, and there's always, always, always good content there. And he's written studies. He's been contributing to group life and small group ministry for, I guess, a couple of decades. It's been a while.
Yes, sir. Does training around the country, even around the world.
So he's a good guy to follow. So I think we've got Bill on the line. Let's move on. Let's see what Bill's got to say.
Bill Search. I'm excited about Bill. Bill obviously is one of the leading voices in group life and is going to give us some great stuff. Hey, Bill, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, Rick. How are you doing?
Great. So good to have you on the show. We're really looking forward to this conversation because you have a history like few people, having been the group's guy at one of the largest churches in the country, Southeast Christian, then being a senior pastor. Tell us again where your church is.
Rolling Hills Christian Church is in the beautiful eastern suburbs of Sacramento, a town called El Dorado Hills. We're on the 50-yard line between the Golden Gate Bridge and South Lake Tahoe. Quite a lovely part of the world.
And I'm just guessing it's beautiful there about 10 months a year, right?
Yeah, when it's not on fire, this area is fantastic.
Well, good. I hope it's not on fire today.
We got some questions today.
We want to ask you.
Yeah, it's just great to be connected, albeit vicariously, to California, even if it's just through the phone line.
Yes, sir. So, Bill, let me ask you a few questions. I know our folks are really excited to hear from you. Many of the folks that are listening will have read your book. And give the title of your book real quick so they'll know what it is.
Simple Small Groups.
And they could get that, I guess, at Amazon or someplace else, right?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, let's climb into a conversation about the relationship and the role that takes place with the small group person as they connect with their pastor. So you do have this real special history. Because of this, we want to ask you questions pertaining to the role of the senior pastor in the church's small group ministry. So, Bill, let's act as though you're sitting around a table with a group of seminary students that are training for group ministry, and one of them asks you this question. What kind of relationship can I expect to have with my senior pastor? What would your response be to that question?
You know, I think a couple key pieces here. You should expect that you and your senior pastor would be partners in the gospel ministry in your church. As you love Jesus, as you love that church, you'll be in it together, because presumably your senior pastor loves Jesus and loves the church. Even if you question that sometimes, I'm pretty confident they do. And so you should expect partnership between you and the senior pastor. But you should also expect the professional relationship. That means that he expects you to do your job. You have a job. You have a job description. So work and let him see it. He is judged every single week by his sermon. He's judged usually by his board as it pertains to giving trends, attendance trends, baptism trends. So he regularly finds himself in a professional role with people around him. And so it would be normal for him to look at you in that professional way and say, you know, what is it you're doing? Who are you investing in? And you ought to look like you're taking your job seriously. You should be taking your job seriously. And as you show professionally your work, I think his respect for you will increase. In fact, I think that's a breakdown in some of the senior pastor or in small group pastor relationships. Sometimes small group pastors don't conduct themselves professionally. They have a good time playing around at work, and the senior pastor feels under the microscope. And so he sort of returns the favor and starts scrutinizing that small group pastor. So don't just look busy, actually be busy at the work of the gospel. But you should expect a friendly relationship. Now, I would say friendly, not friendship. It's probably not going to work out that you and your senior pastor will golf together, play tennis together, hike together. You know, you're probably not going to be besties, and that's okay. But he'll be friendly, and you should be friendly back. You should invite him to lunch, even if he doesn't invite you to lunch. Swing by his office with a cup of coffee, being very, very careful not to overstay your welcome there. Be warm and welcoming to him. I'm one of the few senior pastors that I know of that's an extrovert, so I kind of invite that interaction. Most senior pastors are introverts, so just be prepared that his lack of words or his nonverbals that say, please get out of my office, isn't his dislike for you. It's just personality stuff. You should expect that boss-employee relationship. If he's charged or if the executive pastor is charged, the buck still stops with the senior pastor, so he's going to be your boss. And that means there's going to be times where he gives you orders. He's going to expect you to do things. Do them. Do them to the best of your ability. Do them without grumbling and griping. That will increase your relationship. And then expect that the relationship will be different between you and your senior pastor and the congregation and the senior pastor. Everybody knows the senior pastor from the sermons, from the platform. Less people know the senior pastor from working with him. And so there might be work things that you find disturbing. He might be incredibly warm if he is between the pulpit and the people. But person to person, he may not be that warm. And don't take that personal. Just understand that that's a difference between his public role and his private role. Doesn't mean he doesn't like you. It just means he's different. And then that also means that you might have to serve as a buffer between the congregation and the senior pastor. So that if like I say, you had a, you know, you observe that he's very warm to the congregation, not as warm to you. Don't go to members of the congregation and go, well, you ought to see him in his office. He's a jerk. Don't do that if you like your job. So you should expect there'll be some differences there. So there's a handful of things. There's a bunch of other stuff that probably could fill a book, but that's the first stuff that comes to mind.
Yeah, Bill, I think one of the beautiful things you just did for a lot of people, I think a lot of folks come on board on the church staff and they think, I'm going to get to be really up close with my pastor, especially those folks who are coming in from, they didn't get hired because they went to seminary or coming from another church. Rather, they were hired from within, and they're anticipating this really, really, really close relationship. And we need to always keep in mind that relationship happens because there's chemistry, not because of the titles that we have.
That's right.
And I just think your wise counsel is so important right there.
All right, Bill, I have a question. I'm going to assume that you're still in touch with a lot of groups pastors, for sure, you know, at Rolling Hills, but, you know, you have such a strong voice out in the community that you're still in touch. So if you get the question from groups pastors, and these guys are aware that in order for the ministry to flourish, the senior pastor needs to do two things. He needs to be in a group, but also promote groups and lift them up as a church value. And so I know a lot of times, for whatever reason, senior pastors do neither. How do you advise How do you advise those pastors that might bring that question to you?
Oh, I get that all the time. And, the first thing is there, to my knowledge, and now you all might correct me here, but to my knowledge, there is actually no bona fide research that says that for a group's ministry to flourish, the senior pastor has to be in it. I could be mistaken there, but I have not seen that data. I've seen many flourishing groups ministries where the senior pastor is not in groups, a group of any kind, or doesn't really verbalize much around groups. And I have served in a church where the senior pastor was very hesitant to talk much about groups and was not in one himself. And I was in a church where the senior pastor was in a group and occasionally would talk about his group and encourage people to join groups. And to be honest, it didn't seem to have any difference in or increase in our group life participation. In fact, the church that I served, where the senior pastor never talked about it, had a higher percentage of people in groups than the other church where the senior pastor talked about it all the time. So I just bring that up just to sort of move some of the sacred cows or some of the rumors that are out there off of the table. Is it helpful? I think it can be, but it's not always helpful. So having said all that, here's what you need to know about your senior pastor. Most likely, if he has served for any length of time as a senior pastor, he has been bitterly betrayed by someone in a close inner circle. Now, you might, as an associate or small group pastor, have that same experience, but every senior pastor I've talked to, every single one of them, batting 1,000 on this question, has somebody that was in an inner circle and just tore them up and left the church or caused problems for them. And so the reason it's important for you to know that is very few senior pastors will ever tell anybody that. So I'm telling you that so you know it. But because of that, many senior pastors are very hesitant to trust people. So with that being said, you can't just throw a senior pastor in a group and say, hey, be in community, because some people, either they're used by the evil one or they're just immature. Some people will take that as an opportunity to actually cause harm to the pastor. So just be patient and compassionate towards your pastor. It may not be that he has a theological beef against groups. It may be, practically speaking, he's just a human being who's a little afraid. So with all that, getting all that out of the way, I'd say give him a reason to talk about groups. Celebrate. Share stories. Share statistics. Share biblical passages. Anything that you can do to go, isn't this neat? I just got this email from this person, and they joined a group a year ago, and now they're tithing, you know, or now they're going to get baptized, or they, you know, they just joined a group and they decided this is the church and they're going to join and they're going to become a member. Those are stories that all of a sudden the senior pastor will go, oh, I guess the groups make a difference on the bottom line of church life. And so share those stories with them. Share the key biblical passages. You probably know them better than he does. So share the key biblical passages about community life and group life and in devotional ways. Share those things. Invite him to rally. If you got a small group rally, invite him to the rally and ask him either to be the keynote or a welcoming person. I have stuff around here all the time, and it's amazing to me how little I get invited. And in fact, we had a small group gathering a while back, and I invited myself to it. Now, most senior pastors won't do that. For me, I was like, well, I'm coming. So, but invite him. And a lot of times what happens is he gets preached all the time, so the small group guy doesn't get to preach ever, so the small group guy, who may not even have a teaching gift, he wants to use his 20 minutes as his opportunity to teach, so he doesn't want the senior pastor because he wants the platform, or she wants the platform. And so what I would say is invite your senior pastor to the rally. Ask him to be the keynote. Don't make him be the keynote, but invite him to. And then as much as it depends upon you, create great group experiences for your groups. Focus on your leaders. Develop your leaders. That's that first church I mentioned where I said that the senior pastor wasn't overly supportive of group life. Now, to be clear on something, he was supportive in the staffing of it. He was supportive in the structure of it. So he wasn't not supportive. He just didn't verbalize it and have a big experience with it. But what I did is I worked my fanny off to make sure our small group leaders are the best trained small group leaders out there. I gave them my time, my energy, all my phone numbers and contact. I got back with them. I met them regularly, face to face with them at least every couple weeks. And so my group leaders were discipled. And so as much as it depended upon me as a small group pastor, I made sure my group leaders were well equipped and well trained. A lot of times small group pastors scapegoat senior pastor go, well, my group's ministry is not that good because my senior pastor doesn't say this and that and the other thing. And the truth is they're sitting around reading small group books and they're not calling small group leaders, meeting with small group leaders, discipling small group leaders. As much as it depends upon you, get at work. And then the last thing I'd say is help your senior pastor, join a group if he wants to, but don't judge him if he doesn't. Just drop it. Don't sit around and grumble. Well, Pastor Bob's not in a group. Just leave it alone. But from time to time, go, hey, Pastor Bob, if you want, I would love to help you. But I understand you're busy. So if you can't, and then that will free him and, reduce the guilt on him. So, and it'll make your relationship stronger.
Well, that's great stuff, Bill. I mean, it's incredible. To get that list, a lot of folks listening are going to have some real understandings about this relationship. So let me get that last question. Having served in the senior pastor role, if you were ever to return to leading a group's ministry, what would you do differently in relation to your senior pastor?
Oh, great question. First of all, I just need you to know, having now served as a senior pastor, the best job in the church is small group pastor. You never go to sleep at night thinking about giving trends, attendance trends, sermon series. You have different worries. I remember the worries I had. So enjoy your job. Okay. So good question though. So here's what I would do differently if I was back in the group's chair again or the adult ministry chair is I would show more support and better understanding of the leadership of the church. There were many times where I was the armchair senior pastor going, I can't believe they're doing that. Well, now that I'm the senior, you know, I remember sitting around thinking, that guy is an idiot. I can't believe he's doing that. And here's the sad part. Now I'm the idiot. So I'm sitting around going, why is this idiot doing? Oh, wait, I'm the idiot. I'm the one doing this. So now that I know what I know, I would approach it. I think my first week on the job, my first day on the job, is I would sit down with that senior pastor and say, what would you like from me? I mean, I have ideas about my job. However, what do you want from me? What's your vision for the adult ministry or the small group ministry or whatever kind of division you need? And then how can I support you in accomplishing that vision? How can I help you in that? You do that in an honest way, not in a manipulative way. You do that in an honest way. You will have a fierce advocate because I've now experienced the world of senior pastor. It's a very isolating world. There's things I understand about just the role. I talk about this with senior pastors regularly. It's a very lonely role. I used to think it was just because senior pastors didn't put themselves out there to forge relationships. Now I realize that almost all my relationships with people in my community are around my role, not around me as a human being. Now, when you're a small group pastor or associate pastor, you have a human side people relate to. But the senior pastor is a very different role. It's very lonely. He's not always certain about what he's doing. He's a human being. He's not the Pope. He's not God. He's a human being. So he's flawed, which means he's going to make mistakes. And some people go, I wish he'd just admit that. But then he admits that and it gets exploited. So he has to be cautious about how human he is publicly. And he's got lots on his mind. He's constantly thinking about the renovation of the kids' space, the re-asphalting of the church parking lot and where the money's going to come from, the event in the community he really should be at, whether he should have been present at one of his kids' parties or he was there physically but not mentally. And he's thinking about a gazillion things. So now that I get that, I would more adequately come alongside that guy and I'd have way more compassion towards him. So that means I would show support in different ways. If you want to love on your senior pastor and build a bridge, support his family, his wife, his kids, do everything you can so that they have a great experience in their own church. Support his leadership. If you think he's an idiot, get a journal, put it in the journal, then burn the journal. But don't talk about it with other people. Be very, very cautious with how you complain about your pastor. And there'll be plenty of reasons to complain about. And then support him to other people. Talk him up to other people. So now that I'm giving you sort of like how I would do it if I were back in a position again. And now that seems very much not a profession. That seems very much like a role between you and the senior pastor. But the reason why that's so important is he can make or break your department. He can pour additional resources in. But if you win him over and he feels like you're in his court, he'll be in your court too. And you will have such a high level of trust with each other. When you come to him and say, hey, what if we did this? He will actually be more inclined to listen to you because he knows you listen to him. But all too often, associate pastors try to run their own church inside the church, do their own thing inside the church. And then that senior pastor, he knows that's happening. He might let it happen, but he doesn't have high trust there. So, and then, you know, that's on that role. And then I would just, if I were to have the role again, I'd just go back to what I did before, which is work my behind off and meet with people, build up and disciple. Our job in ministry is a couple thousand years old now. So there's not a whole lot of new tricks. It's just the real question is, will you roll up your sleeves and do it? Will you work hard? And, so there you go. There's a lot in there. Hopefully I said something that answered your question.
I'll tell you, Bill, a lot of times on this show, we get good list of how to's. It's mm-hmm. been really neat to hear you today because you've given a great list of wise counsel. And I think so often that's what pastors need more than anything else is they need wise counsel on how to deal with senior pastor life issues with people, whatever. So thank you so much for bringing your years of experience and your understanding, as I mentioned before, that few people could ever have.
Yeah, it's true. Bill, you have a truly unique backstory, I think, in terms of those roles and your ability to speak into both of those roles and how they work together. That was actually fascinating.
Well, it's been my pleasure to be with y'all, and hopefully something I said will increase a person's joy in their calling. Hopefully it will increase their tenure at their church and their effectiveness as a pastor. If something was said today that helps in one of those, I'll be pleased. So God bless y'all and your work. And it was a pleasure to be with you.
Hey, thanks for being with us on the Groups Matter Show. Well, that was fascinating.
That was fascinating.
Plain words from Dr. Search.
Bill always shoots straight, and that's one thing you love about him.
So what do you think about that? It's, you know, basically he's saying it's not necessarily true that the senior pastor at that level of engagement, being in a group and being very public in support of the group ministry, that's not necessarily that doesn't necessarily translate into a successful groups ministry. In other words, he's saying, hey, don't come crying to me if your group ministry is not working, you know. But I do think the senior pastor can step into and offset some deficiencies that may have in that area through those two things.
Sure. So I'm going to contradict things I've been saying for years. Not so long ago, I had a conversation with someone whose blog post we looked at, Jim Egli. And Jim was at a conference with some folks who were talking about the role of the senior pastor. And he's a statistics guy in the group world. And he actually said that his research had proven that the senior pastor promoting or not promoting groups made no difference about the numbers of people that got into groups. Now, I've never heard anybody ever say that, but he's the only person I know that's ever said he's done research on the topic either. So it doesn't make good sense to me because that whole concept of a leader is the one that people listen to most. But according to Jim, that's not what we've always said it is.
Yeah, I'll take both Jim and Bill's word for it. I mean, they've lived in those trenches and they understand. And yeah, there may not be any hard evidence, but it just seems like that is a vital ministry of the church. It is your education space. It is your community space. It is the engine in some respects, at least on the person side of things, to where a lot of ministry happens, that to lift that up would be something that should happen, even if it doesn't. Now, I guess I'm left no choice but to agree that a small group pastor can't use that as a reason for things not running maybe as well as you would hope or expect. And maybe that's more what we're talking about here than the actual success of it, because no leader wants a report coming in saying, essentially, it's your fault. If you would give me more support, that's a bad position to take. And I think that could color a lot of what Bill said there.
Well, you know, Bill kind of climbed more so into the space of the pastor's heart, and having been hurt by people he's given his heart to, why would he go into a space and give his heart to a group of people? Even if one person in a group of 12 burns him, he's still burned, and he gets beat up a lot already. So to promote something that hurts people, that may be his only experience.
Wow, his reference about 1,000%.
Yes.
Now that I would not have been surprised with a real high number, but for that to be 1,000%, that means that every senior pastor he knows, and he has drawn the conclusion that every senior pastor has been betrayed by a close relationship, and just that level of leadership in a church, you know, I'll be honest, that's heartbreaking.
Well, all of us that work with churches on an ongoing basis, when he said that, I was nodding my head, because the people I work with, senior pastors, tell me the same.
But some good words there. You know, this idea of being serious and being professional and about that relationship, just dead on. So
for sure.
And like I said, you know, he has a unique perspective, because not only was he a small groups pastor and a senior pastor, he was a small groups pastor at a huge church and a very successful one. He's got Bible studies and book. And, you know, he was a keynote for you back in, was it August?
Yeah. Outstanding, as always.
Okay, so let's move on. Let's do Tweets of the Week this week. I'll kick us off. And this is the segment where we like to just look out in the Twitterverse and see what's going on. And we'd love to hear from you. So we are scouring Twitter for the hashtag small groups and for anything that has to do with groups, and love to share what's going on in your churches and your lives with the group ministry. And Twitter is just a really cool thing to do anyway. So this is from Molly at Molly Desposito. And she's at Church of the Highlands. You've probably been in and out of Church of the Highlands a little bit, haven't you?
A great church.
Down in Birmingham. Molly says, less than a month away from the launch of fall semester small groups. Would love to get you connected, friends. Hashtag Highlands, hashtag COTH. And I chose this one because the fall is such a big time of year for groups ministry. And, you know, a lot of churches are launching groups.
It is a very important time. And that she's recognized the importance of it is really exciting. I want to run down with a guy named Jeremy Lyon. Jeremy Lyon _ JERLYON. He says, small groups are important. Big exclamation mark. They're not just social clubs. They are where we grow in Christ. Man, that is a huge statement. Because when you have a group that has become a social club, you don't grow in Christ. On the other hand, if you have a group that's becoming that's full of people who are striving to grow in Christ, they will have great social experiences together.
That's a pretty big paradigm change, too, because I think anytime you get people together, I think there is a tendency based on the person they make up to kind of aggregate towards that social club mentality.
For sure.
We've talked about that before, but just to understand and for that small group leader to stay on point, that's not what this is. But, you know, it's also kind of difficult to navigate because there is a social aspect that needs to be in place, because that's how we get to know each other. So you just need to be mindful of those two things and keep a balanced approach.
Yep.
And then the last tweet of the week for this week, this is episode 14
of
the Groups Matter podcast, 14. Is from Aaron Kennedy at AARON Kennedy. We are not a church with small groups. We're a church of small groups. Can't encourage you enough. So I chose this one, and I wanted to ask you just quickly, how do you define the difference between a church with small groups and a church of small groups? I've heard that a lot. I think I understand it. How would you interpret that?
So here's my description. A church with small groups is a church that has other programming that people can be involved in. And small groups is another option in the midst of many programs. A church of small groups basically, in most instances, does children's ministry, student ministry, groups, and worship. They are so focused on giving people time to be in groups that they don't create a lot of competing programs. So that would be the differentiators for me.
All right. Thanks, Rick Howerton. That's going to wrap it up for the Tweets of the Week for this episode of the Groups Matter podcast. Follow us at Rick Howerton and at BC Daniel. We'd love to have anything that you've got in connection to your group life. Love to see that. You know, we're self-proclaimed groupies and just love following and seeing what you're doing, what you're studying, and what the trends are. So Look forward to hearing from you in the future shows. So, Rick, how about we move on to the post, your Rick's List?
That's a deal. 5 reasons a church-wide campaign is great for your group's ministry. For those who don't know what I'm talking about when I mention a church-wide campaign, that's when the pastor does a series of sermons, normally 6 weeks. Every group is studying the same topic the pastor is preaching on each of those 6 weeks, and those 6 weeks are all built around a theme. So probably the most well-known campaign ever done was the Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren, and churches around the country, even around the world, got engaged in that. So how is a campaign, no matter what the campaign is about, what are 5 reasons it's great for a small group ministry? First of all, the senior pastor has to promote the group's ministry. Interesting, considering the conversation we just had with Bill. But at this point, the pastor has to promote the group's ministry because he's building this initiative around the groups. The second reason is that it elevates the importance of groups to the entire church body. Even those who aren't in a group are being requested to spend 6 weeks in a group. So the pastor is elevating the importance of groups to the entire church, and everyone begins to consider the importance of groups in their own life and in the church's life. Thirdly, it gives those who have been hesitant to join a group a chance to try one out for a short period of time. There is no better time to engage people in a group than the 6 weeks you're doing a campaign, because you are saying to everyone in the church body, we want every person in a group, and it's just 6 weeks. So you get these people in a group, and in 6 weeks, they get a chance to be in a group, see what it's like, see if they enjoy it, see if it makes a difference in their lives. And in many instances, they do stick around. The fourth reason is it forces current small group leaders and group members to see beyond themselves. Those who might have been in a group that's unwilling to multiply, or a group that has just grown stagnant, they are requested to invite new people into their group, even if just for this 6 weeks. So if they're with them for 6 weeks, that group begins to think more missionally than they might have prior to that campaign. And then finally, it is one of the most effective and efficient ways to start new groups that last. So there are many churches who have actually grown their church on starting groups during a campaign. What they do is simply this. As they begin to promote the campaign, they begin to ask people that are not in a group or people who are already in a group, would you be willing to lead a group for just 6 weeks? And they normally get people in those groups who are not currently in a group. About the fourth week in, they begin to ask those people who are taking on those short-term groups, would you be willing to continue to lead that group, and would the people in your group be willing to stay with you, or at least part of them? I mean, this has been extremely effective for some amazing churches. The one I'm closest with is the group's guy there is Eddie Mosley, who many will know. In Smyrna at his LifePoint Church, Eddie tells me that every time they do a campaign, about 70% of the short-term groups they start just to be in existence during the campaign continue on after the campaign. So those are 5 pretty compelling reasons, Brian, to do a campaign, and compelling reasons to consider, because they really aid you in growing your group's ministry and getting people into groups.
How many times a year would you recommend a church campaign?
Most churches that do campaigns and build their church around campaigns will do those campaigns 2 or 3 times a year. After school starts, after Christmas, after New Year's actually, and then some will actually do another campaign after Easter.
And any recommendations or insights about how to choose a campaign?
Yeah, the pastor needs to sit down with the group's person and talk about the needs of the people if they're wise. They would need to choose a campaign around one of 2 purposes. One, if the primary goal is to get new people to consider coming to church so they can hear the gospel, they want to choose a real life issue, something that the average Joe out there is dealing with, whether or not they're believers. So it might be finance, or it might be parenting. Something of that nature. On the other hand, the second purpose that might be considered is, where do our people have weaknesses? So, for instance, they don't know how to pray. They don't know how to study their Bible would be another option. Now, we need to keep in mind, when we do that, we may not get those who are not presently in church to consider being one of our groups. But nonetheless, it is a great way to take a body of Christ, aid a body of Christ in moving forward in learnings and understandings where there's a deficiency community-wide.
So if I want to start a campaign after the first of the new year, when would I need to start planning that?
November.
November.
A lot of planning. You got to recruit your leaders. When you get into December, people are thinking about Christmas and family coming. So you really need to start early on that one.
Is it always about 2 months, regardless of the time of year?
No, I think I would start even earlier. Because here's the deal. The amount of prayer necessary to move this forward is as important as the planning that goes into it. So I would start at least 3 months out and begin to work toward the goal of having everything. Because here's the deal. You've got to have your small group leaders recruited. You've got to alert your present leaders that they need to set their study back. So if they've already chosen their next study, or if they're in the middle of a 13-weeker, you don't want to blindside them if they're in the middle of experiencing God. And these people are really excited about that. And you say, well, you got to stop that. Because you're really telling every group leader, during this time, we're throwing it on pause. So there's a list of reasons.
All right, Rick. Well, thank you so much. The church campaign is different from just sermon-based small group studies. This is much more comprehensive. It requires much more advanced preparation. And really the intent, well, there are many intents, but new groups is one of the reasons, one of the primary motivators for the church campaign. Whereas the sermon-based has a different methodology behind it.
Yes, for sure.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 14 of the Groups Matter Show. I'd like to thank Bill Search for being with us today. That was definitely a treat. Bill, I've known him for several years. I know you've known him for even longer than that.
Amazing guy.
And for Rick, that information on churchwide campaigns, really great. And Mike Mack in that post. So be sure and check out Mike's blog. That's Mike Mack, M-A-C-K. You can Google his name and find that blog. And next week, we're going to have Michael Kelly with us.
Yes.
Which leads me to the sponsor of this week's show. So Michael's going to be talking about the gospel in groups. So real excited about having him on. And Michael is one of those guys that's just, he is an amazing thinker. I think you would agree.
And communicator, one of the finest preachers I know.
And communicator. And so this week's sponsor, again, is smallgroup.com. So smallgroup.com is a tool that you can use to create sermon-based Bible studies, or actually any kind of small group Bible study, very, very quickly. So you need to check that out. You can put in your text or your topic, and it gives you options almost instantly.
It actually, Brian, brings a Bible study up on the site, up on the page, and you can revamp it any way you like to.
Yeah, the customizable aspect of it is one of the absolute perks and attributes of this tool. So I'd like to thank smallgroup.com for sponsoring episode 14, the Groups Matter podcast show. And thank you for being with us, and look forward to seeing you or being with you for episode 15 next week.